Welcome to The Sound of Economics. I'm here in Rome at a conference jointly organized by the OCP Policy Center and Bruegel on the topic of EU-MENA shared prosperity. We are discussing trade relations in the Mediterranean, the trade relations between Europe and the North African economies. We are discussing value-added chains. We are discussing the structural domestic economic problems on both sides of the Mediterranean, actually. I am joined in our backstage podcast discussion by Karim El Alainoui, director of the OCP Policy Center, and Uri Dadoš, who is a senior fellow at both Bruegel and the OCP Policy Center. Perhaps let me start with Uri on the more specific question of the trade relations. Uri, you are just finishing a paper for our both think tanks on the trade relations. What is the key message that your paper is giving to policymakers on both sides of the Mediterranean?
Well, the trade agreements that are the object of the discussion are with Tunisia and Morocco, Egypt and Algeria, and were negotiated and came into force sometime between the mid-90s to the early 2000s. These agreements, by and large, I think it's fair to say, have been considered to disappoint in terms of their overall outcomes. And it's difficult to separate the vision or the view of these trade agreements from the very disappointing economic performance of the region over the last 10 to 15 years. So it's true to say that growth in the region has been relatively low compared to other low middle income countries and compared to the need to create employment in the region. And it's been volatile, and it's also characterized by large macroeconomic imbalances, fiscal deficits, and current account deficits. And not surprisingly, the agreements are sort of considered either as being partly to blame for this or as simply not have helped very much. And the case against the agreements is made stronger by the fact that there's been a large increase in the bilateral trade deficit of the North African countries with the European Union over the last few years. However, in our paper, we evaluate the agreements in a more fundamental way, and we make the point that the press that the agreement have gotten has been probably a little too unfavorable, that there have actually been real positives to the agreements.
Well, Uri, can I ask you a little bit further on these agreements and zoom in a little bit? I mean, in your presentation, you made very clear that the trade agreements are overall to be seen more positive than what a lot of the press is saying. But you also said that the large trade deficits that some of the North African countries are showing is in fact something that one should be worrying about and or at least be looking into. And you very much emphasize that there is a need to evaluate critically national domestic policies in the north of Africa. The intuitive reaction that one could give to this is, well, trade deficits are actually what we would like to see in these countries because they are catching up economies, so there should be capital inflow, there should be investment into those countries. And only to the extent that capital inflows are not productive and go into unproductive uses, consumption, and so on, we have a sustainability problem. Otherwise, why worry about trade deficits and capital inflows into these catching up economies?
Yeah, so the answer is that indeed we believe there is significant misallocation of capital, if you like, or the rate of return on capital investment in these countries is relatively low. For example, in the case of Morocco, this is actually documented by a lot of evidence. There's a lot of investment in Morocco, but the growth rate does not correspond to the rate of investment. In Algeria, there's a huge amount, of course, government investment. It's a highly distorted economy and exhibiting very low, I mean, low growth rates compared to other developing countries. And you have similar sorts of problems in Egypt and Tunisia, where perhaps the evidence is less well developed. So the answer is yes, we believe there is misallocation of investment. There is a low rate of return on investment, reflecting in particular the weaknesses in domestic policies. But that's not the whole story, because a part of the current account deficit is by definition also the result of domestic savings. And domestic savings are lower than they should be, in part because of the very large budget deficits that these countries have been running.
So overall, a positive evaluation of trade agreements, but a clear message also that domestic policies in the north of Africa have to change to make sure that capital inflows go in the right direction, that jobs are being created. So overall, a very clear positive evaluation of trade agreements, but also a clear warning that without accompanying changes in domestic policies, there is a risk that trade deficits might turn into unsustainability, but also into a lack of appropriate job creation in the north of Africa, but also a clear message for domestic policy reform needs in the European Union on agricultural policies and other issues, so as to open markets and have more reciprocal, more symmetric agreements, giving more opportunities for both sides of the Mediterranean to grow. Perhaps that's a good transition to move to you, Karim, and get the key messages from your paper, which are, of course, on the value-added chains. And I think you had a long discussion in your paper on the automotive industry, but also on the aeronautics industry, two sectors that not everybody is immediately aware are very well represented in Morocco, and that are very well integrated, of course, also with the European value chains, with French companies being present and so on. So Karim, perhaps you can walk us through the main messages on value-added chains that your paper gives.
Thank you, Gundham. Yes, and I think it's a good news, and it, in a way, gives also a positive assessment of the free trade agreements that have been judged as being negative in a sort of, I would say, a harsh way. So we've seen over the past 10 years in Morocco emerging a world industry, activities in the industrial sector, particularly in the, I can add the pharmaceutical business to the automobile and the aeronautics sector, where Morocco has been able to attract the companies that are organizing those global value chain. Because let's not forget, these are organized by companies, not by government. The government can only have the right policy to do that, and in particular the industrial policy. And today, Morocco, for instance, from basically a couple of less than 20,000 cars in the automobile sector, is now exporting about 400,000 cars a year. And this has happened in the very short time span, about less than 6 years. The other one is the aeronautic cluster that is nearby the airport in Casablanca, that has started also around one company as a pioneer, and with appropriate industrial policy, with subsidy elements, with the, I would say, positive incentives from the government, But at some point, it has a self-sustainability as you know, skills are developing, and you have the labor market and positive externalities from the investment of the pioneer that have allowed others to come. And the same story goes in the pharmaceutical industry that was initially created to that was initially incentivized through a sort of import substitution policy, and that has over the recent year evolved toward a model that is included in the global value chain of you know, the largest pharmaceutical companies companies in the world. And I would say that this kind of dynamics, combined with strong domestic policies that you mentioned earlier on, with the framework of the free trade agreement with the European Union, has been the framework at the heart of this success, basically. So we have to look at this way beyond just, you know, trade flows. It is also about foreign direct investment. It is also about producing locally, being integrated in this global value chain. And, you know, one interesting fact that we show in the paper is that this is not only about trade of finished products or intermediate products, but it's also about trading services. And, you know, a big chunk of those exchange of intermediate products take place in the area of the service sector, but also imported, but also produced locally in Morocco. And with very interesting, you know, dynamics and effects on the national domestic sector, that in some activities that were basically non-traded for Morocco, that have become, through investment in the manufacturing sector, traded services.
Can you perhaps give our listeners a few concrete figures and numbers in terms of the automobile industry? I think you showed the number of cars that are being produced in Morocco and being exported, but perhaps also in the aeronautic or pharmaceutical sector. I mean, how much is produced and how much is being exported? I mean, just I think the sheer numbers are actually very interesting, because the numbers are much, much more significant than at least I expected.
Yes, if I take, for instance, to give you a number on the embedded component of service activities, it is about 30% of the total value added produced in that sector, which is not marginal. And about 20% comes from foreign generated value added, and about 10% in Morocco. So these are not small numbers. Today, exports of automobile is the largest export in Morocco. For a long time, it has been phosphate. And its derivatives. Yes. How many? It's about, end of 2017 was about 375,000 cars. And I think they will be, you know, maybe reaching 400,000 cars by the end of 2018. There's a new investment by PSA, Peugeot. Plan is to produce about 100,000 cars in you know, 2-3 years. They're now investing, and then Renault will be ramping up its production. So, you know, the prospects and the plan for the car exports, we're talking, you know, 1 million car by 2025, which is, you know, quite maybe one caveat in this is that it is the combination of skilled labor and capital. And in a country where you have an important stock of unemployed workers, and also workers that are out of the labor force, this kind of industry with high productivity do not respond to that need. So it is important for a country like Morocco to maintain good policies and, you know, and you know, attractiveness in labor-intensive industries such as the tourism sector, which have a lower productivity but which provides for employment.
Perhaps one last question to you, Karim, which is about the relations, economic relations with Europe on the one hand, and Africa, China, US on the other hand, for your part of the world. I mean, we've seen the statistic that, of course, the main trading partners of your part of the world in Europe have not been doing tremendously well in the last 10 years. I mean, especially Italy and Spain have had very severe recessions. I mean, Spain is now doing much better. The growth numbers are actually a very positive story. But Italy certainly is not the growth locomotive of Europe, let alone of the world. While major other growth centers, China is far away, the US is pretty far away, and then that leaves you, of course, with Africa, where connectivity is still not great between your part of the world and Africa. But and the growth rates, of course, of Africa are better, but also not brilliant, depending on where you look. So where is Morocco and the broader region looking at this stage? What is the key regions you are looking at for growth, for exports, for new value creation?
That's a great question from a great economist, but it's the. I think we need to. If you look at Europe on a long, in the long run, basically, potential growth, and as you know, the estimations are quite iffy. They're not very robust, but you can expect about 1.5%. Long-run growth. As Morocco, we've traditionally traded with Europe, but increasingly our trade with Africa and the rest of the continent is increasing, because of course, the average growth rate of the continent, of the West African countries, will be around 5%. And if you project it over the next 20, 25 years, it's maybe 6 to 7%. So I see this as an opportunity. Of course, there are barriers such as network infrastructure, but you could see this as an opportunity, for investment, for private capital. These are profitable investments, and this is where we could do this together. I think the natural area for Europe is, of course, the Mediterranean, but also more broadly Africa. And we could work together to organize that future, meaning, to strengthen our regional value chains, to give, appropriate policy frameworks for our companies, the right infrastructure, convergence in terms of regulatory practices, in terms of the business climate environment. And you can even imagine a system where you reward the best performers. I think we have to move beyond blanket approaches where we have, generic deals that in the end are based on the smallest denominator. I think we should take countries that want to get into, to go further, to go deeper, to be more serious, and to accept, sort of peer evaluation. I can give concrete example. We were talking about the aeronautics in Morocco. We are already becoming less and less competitive on some of the activities. You could organize and help organize through appropriate industrial policy and agreements, value chains with other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, and that could combine Morocco, sub-Saharan Africa, and Europe.
Well, this brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you very much, Karim. Thank you very much, Uri, for this discussion on EU-MENA shared prosperity.